About 3 years ago, I was a science reporter on board the North Atlantic research vessel, Baseline Explorer. We were roughly 20 kilometers off the coast of Bermuda at the time, and I was getting set to go down in a two-man submersible, something I'd wanted to do since I was a kid. The pilot of the sub was a deep-sea veteran called Percy. Great guy, great sense of humor, spoke with a thick Texan drawl that made even dumb things sound folksy and wise. First words he said to me were, "You ever been down one of these things?" "Never," I was grinning, excited as a schoolboy. I was practically shaking. "You'll never forget it," he assured me. In hindsight, that was some genius level foreshadowing if I ever heard it. If I ever heard it. These submersibles weigh in at about 8 tons, rigged with state-of-the-art scientific equipment, massive search beams mounted just forward of the acrylic bubble. They're ultra-maneuverable even at extreme depths. You can spin them 360 degrees on a dime, and they have this massive hydraulic arm that the pilot controls with a joystick. I saw Percy move that arm so skillfully, I swear to God he could have plucked the pacifier out of a baby's mouth without even waking it. When he wasn't piloting the sub, Percy liked to play computer games back in the ship's rec room. I've played untold levels of Call of Duty with him, and take it from an old school gamer like me. This guy is crazy good. And what's even crazier, he's 58 years old with 6 grandchildren. Percy was a great guy. But after that voyage, my first, his 103rd, he was never that same guy again. None of us were ever the same again. The submersibles are miracles of engineering. They can withstand up to 25 EAs, Earth atmospheres, which basically means 25 times the pressure at surface level. That's the equivalent of an ant moving around with 12 jumbo jets parked right on top of it. I'll never forget the sensation the first time I slipped down through the bubble's hatch. I was scared. I knew what to expect, but I didn't expect the bubble to be so small. It felt claustrophobic, like climbing down into a tumble dryer. But it actually wasn't so bad once I was seated. We had a panoramic view of the world through the wraparound glass, better than IMAX. But as the ship's crane lowered us into the water, I couldn't help wondering whether this was the last time I'd ever see the sunlight. I was nervous about the journey ahead. My publishers wanted a video essay of a deep-sea dive in one of the subs, which made sense seeing as my job was to report on all the functions of a scientific research vessel. But we were going down close to the sub's limit, almost 1,000 meters. And suddenly, the whole thing was very daunting. But Percy quickly put me at my ease. He'd been down over 100 times, and in his opinion, it was safer than driving to the neighborhood liquor store. As the sub descended into the depths, it felt like we were motionless for long periods of time, like we were just hanging there in an eternity of blue-tinted space. But Percy assured me we were still descending, still going down, the water becoming bluer, darker, the deeper we went. There was a second submersible trailing us like a ghost. The pilot was an Israeli guy called Avi. He was a stoic son of a gun. I'd been on board the Baseline Explorer 3 weeks, and I'd never seen him crack so much as a smile. He was nicknamed the Machine. The name fit him like a glove. He flashed his searchlights at us at the beginning of the trip when we were hovering close to the surface, and sometimes Percy would talk to him over the radio as we made our way down. But it was all professional chit-chat. The Machine wasn't the kind of person who inspired small talk. As the co-pilot of the sub, it was pretty much my job to keep the glass clear of condensation. So, every few minutes, I'd give the inside of the acrylic bubble a wipe over. The rest of the time, I was filming and commentating on whatever I was seeing around me. Around 200 meters down, we started moving from the epipelagic zone, the sunlight zone, to the twilight, or mesopelagic zone. And now, the ocean turned this deep aquamarine, like the sky just before dawn. We see a moray eel slithering through the cone of our searchlights, a school of grouper fish flittering around us like silver confetti, and the machine calls our attention to a couple of small tiger sharks that follow us for a while and then peel off into the darkness. We're almost 1,000 meters underwater and it's pitch black. We're in the midnight zone. Not a single photon of light is able to get down this far. The only source of illumination is our searchlight. We're just fixing to start heading back up, when suddenly, Percy kills all momentum. We're just hanging there. What's wrong? Percy looks stone-faced. His skin had drained of all color and his lips were trembling, like he was muttering something under his breath, and he had this fixed expression on his face, this intensity to his gaze that warned me something was off. Percy? Percy reached out and snapped the searchlights off. There's something out there, he whispered. I don't know how to describe the impact those words had on me. You can report the things a man says, but it is hard to convey the way he says them. And the way Percy said, "There's something out there," sent an instant chill down my spine. He sounded scared. Only the sound of our breathing now, as we both stared out into the pitch blackness. There was something out there. I couldn't see it, but I could sense it. Something was watching us, and I've never felt anything like that before. I was an atheist at the time, but afterwards, I would describe it as a religious experience. I have no idea what I meant by that. I was in shock at the time. I don't know what the hell I was saying. What is it? I barely recognized the sound of my own voice. It sounded thin and childlike. Like suddenly, in a heartbeat, I had regressed to infancy. I gripped Percy's arm. What's out there? I turned to him. He looked like death. He looked more scared than I have ever seen a man, computer lights pattering his features, shadows scavenging his flesh, his eyes yellow and glazed with terror. What the hell would scare a man like Percy? He was hard as nails, an adrenaline junkie by all accounts. But right then, he looked like he was walking the Green Mile. I turned back and stared out the bubble of the Atlantis. Darkness so deep, it seemed to swallow my thoughts. What was out there? Why was I shaking with this incomprehensible dread? It felt like a premonition of doom. The searchlights from the second sub carved past us. The machine, oblivious to what we could so clearly sense, he was maneuvering his sub sideways, trying to figure out why we had come to a full stop. Turn the lights off, Percy whispered in a voice tight with panic. And then suddenly, he jerked forward and flicked the radio toggle. Avi, turn your damn lights off, he hissed. But it was too late. The searchlights illuminated something in the darkness below us. And to my dying day, I wish I'd never seen what I saw next. It's haunted my dreams ever since. I've burned through 3 marriages and an army of therapists. I've attempted suicide 3 times and I'm addicted to opioids and booze and I still can't get that image out of my head. At first, I thought I was looking down at some kind of luminous disc of immense size. I'd guess 3 times the diameter of our sub. So, I'd say about 20 feet across. And it was a silvery texture, soft and slightly faceted. There were bands of colour radiating outwards from this circle of absolute black that sat right in the centre of the disc. I can't describe that black. It was darker than the absence of light. It was like the absence of hope. before he put a bullet in his head 3 years ago. Percy called me up. It was like looking into nothing, he told me. Absolute zero. It tore my damn mind apart. He was sobbing as he spoke. He was in a bad way. His wife had left him. His kids had disowned him. He'd lost his home, his job, his dignity. And finally, he lost the reason to go on living. Nietzsche once said, "When you look into the abyss also looks into you." That's what it felt like, staring into that black circle. Like it was staring back at me. I saw it for maybe a second before the machine snapped his searchlights off. But there was an eternity in that second. There was the sensation of falling into the abyss, being swallowed by the darkness, of slowly losing my mind. It was an eye. That disc with a black circle in the middle had been a damn eye that measured 20 feet across. And to this day, my skin goes cold when I remember it. This colossal eye staring at us out of the dark, and the intensity of that gaze was beyond human comprehension. It was an intelligence measured in aeons. It was an evil beyond scripture, beyond reason, and it laid its immemorial gaze upon us, and we were blighted by it, scarred by it, destroyed by it. God help us. And then, the machine snapped his searchlights off, and the darkness took away that awful vision, but not the memory of it. I felt despair unlike anything I've ever experienced. A black terror filled my heart. That eye. Jesus Christ in heaven, how big was the monster that possessed that eye? It felt biblical. I didn't have to look at Percy to know he was feeling the same thing. That eye did not belong to a thing of reason or nature. It was not a thing of science. It was a monster. It was the mother of every nightmare our children wake screaming from. And even as I thought this, Percy whispered, "Curse that day to those who are ready to rouse Leviathan." And to my ears, he sounded like a dead man quoting scripture. I gazed into the darkness ahead. I knew that eye was still staring at us, even though I could no longer see it. I felt the crushing weight of its gaze, and I was drunk with the horror of it, making sounds at the back of my throat, attempts to speak, but no words came out. I was trapped. I wanted to run and hide, but sitting in a tiny submersible 1,000 meters below sea level, there's nowhere to run. And nowhere to hide. The radio crackled. The machine was saying something, but I wasn't listening. I was still staring into that god-awful darkness. Something was moving out there. I could sense it, like a mountain turning its ancient face towards us. And I could feel the dreadful gravity of that monster as it turned. The most horrific images flashing through my head. Mass graves filled with bodies not quite dead. A wolf chewing through a leg caught in a hunter's trap. Emaciated children standing behind a chain-link fence. Refugees caught on barbed wire borders, screaming for help. I was tearing at my hair and beating at my skull. But the images only grew more horrific. And my brain felt like one huge, pulsing blood clot. I heard Percy howling in pain and terror. I heard my own screams from a million miles away. And then, abruptly, the images were gone. I sucked in a sobbing breath and turned to Percy and yelled, "Get us out of here." He shook his head. "Look," he said. Something had appeared in the darkness ahead. There was some kind of fissure opening up in the inky void, a fiery glow spilling out of it that illuminated the surrounding ocean. And as I watched, the fissure grew wider and wider until it gaped almost 100 feet wide, maybe more. And that fiery, larval glow filled my entire forward vision. It was the colour of napalm and post-nuclear sunset, and staring into that yawning chasm, I swear to God, I saw hell incarnate, filled with multitudes of tortured souls. My therapists all said it was a hallucination. But Percy and the machine both saw the same thing. The fissure opening into a cavern of impossible dimensions, so vast it contained entire mountain ranges and fiery lakes and rivers of boiling blood and molten rain, burning as it fell from thick, sulfur, yellow clouds. And I saw naked multitudes, thousands upon thousands of screaming souls, being snatched up by enormous winged beasts and cast into these lakes of fire. The winged beasts were horrific looking, some kind of hybrid. They carried pitchforks and branded irons, and some of them had the heads of birds and the bodies of men, and others were reptilian monstrosities. But all of them, I sensed, were filled with a black hatred for humanity. Percy was screaming the Lord's Prayer, and I remember my mouth stretched wide, gaping in horror and tears streaming down my face. And then that awful fissure slowly closed. And I think it was that moment I realized I'd been staring into the mouth of that creature. I don't know how we got back to the surface. I remember they had to handcuff me to a cot in the infirmary once we were back on board the ship. I was screaming. I couldn't stop. They made me wear diapers. I couldn't even control my bowels. I was in the infirmary 3 days, screaming and messing myself into a stupor. The machine hung himself a week after returning home. His wife found him. He left a note, a single word in Hebrew. Leviathan. I'm trying to put it behind me. It's been 6 years, and I'm the only one left. The days are getting better, but I dread the coming of night. Sinking down into sleep, the way we sank down into that abyss, terrified of what awaits me in my dreams. I've never been back to the ocean. God bless us all.